We're really also on a mission to try to get investors to rethink their advertising and be a lot more relevant and have more empathy for the folks. Instead of, hey, you're in foreclosure, I buy houses for cash, just taking a little different approach, because somebody in foreclosure, you think their issue is that they need to sell their house and that they need to get out. That's what most investors think their issue is. But if you stop and think about it a little bit more, what's their real issue? Their real issue is they're worried they won't be able to rent a house after they lose their house.
This is Eat, Sleep, Invest, the marketing podcast for real estate investors to get more deals.
Hey, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Eat, Sleep, and Invest. I'm your host, Brian Driscoll, and I'm here with Sean O'Toole. What's going on, Sean?
Not much. Great to be here.
Hey, thanks for coming on. But hey, Sean, why don't you give everybody a little background? Like, how did you even get into this space? And just tell me the story.
I was in tech, working in Silicon Valley, three startups. We launched the first streaming video on the internet. So one of the first hosting companies. After the dot-com crash, I took a year off, focused on getting my wife pregnant, going and playing, trying to figure out what I was going to do next. And met a guy who was working in real estate and making a lot more money than most people in tech, unless you just happen to hit the lottery and, you know, you're one of the first few folks at Google. And had a much better life in terms of time and quality of life. Ended up flipping 160 some odd properties. That was back then. That was a lot. This is, you know, 2002 to 2005. These days, it doesn't seem like very much, but it was, you know, it's still a few. During that, I discovered public records. And I just thought, oh my gosh, this is such an amazing resource. And it was so hard to get your hands on. And I started tracking every foreclosure in California, because I made $1 million on a Taco Bell deal, which was pretty cool. And then just took this data and decided I'd make it available to others in 2006, because I didn't really want to buy any more property right then, especially in the Central Valley, which turned out to be a good call. We launched Foreclosure Radar in 2007, right before the foreclosure crisis. Everybody thought I was a genius for timing that correctly. And then expanded to property information. And now the majority of our customers, we still have a lot of foreclosure customers, a lot of folks just using us for property information, comps, that kind of, you know, property search. But most of our folks now are using us to build an audience to market to.
So you said you guys made the first video online?
Yeah, so it was a company called Zing Streamworks, and Mark Cuban was one of our first customers. He started broadcast.com using our software, and this was 94. You know, in the case, the frame rate was like one frame, you know, per second. It was terrible. Most of our early customers were Mark Cuban and porn guys. And yeah, and we ended up getting acquired for a fair bit of money. And that was kind of my first at bat where I made a good chunk of change pretty young.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, because that's early tech there. Yeah, Mark Cuban's actually from Pittsburgh. He grew up, I don't know him personally, but grew up like 10 minutes from where I live.
Yeah. He was a bear to deal with as a customer, but, you know, obviously a real smart dude.
Yeah. Super smart. Okay. So that's interesting. So you got the credentials in tech. You've been doing this since a long time ago.
Yeah. I dropped out of college at 18 to start my first software company. So yes, and I'm 56 now. So it's been a while.
It's funny too. A lot of guys that I talk to are really successful, like never completed college. They thought it out a little bit and then it's like, it's not for me. Let's go do something else.
Yeah, I tried twice, but yeah, it was too busy making money.
Right, yeah. So you had the foreclosure website, and then you switched to property radar, like Foreclosure Radar. What's the difference in what they do?
So, you know, we still have Foreclosure Radar as a brand, and it's really the same product underneath. And there's some different pricing options if all you want to do is look at properties that have some stage of foreclosure versus all properties. And that's basically the difference, right? Property Radar is every property in the nation. Foreclosure Radar is only those properties that have some stage of current or past foreclosure.
Okay, interesting. Now, on Property Radar, because you guys have a lot of different data points, right?
Yes, it's interesting. One of our competitors came out a little while ago and said, hey, we have over 40,000 combinations of search criteria, right? They give you all the different ways you can search. So I popped in and calculated ours, and we're right about a Google. And if you don't know what a Google is, you can Google it. And that's what Google's actually named after is a Google. So it's a very big number.
Is it like a one with 100 zeros after or something?
It's crazy. Yeah. It's like, and, you know, we could dive into this more, but I really realized, you know, here, I'll give you an example. Everybody does absentee owner list, right? You know, that's a really common list. What is an absentee owner? Like, honest question, what is an absentee owner?
Absentee owner, in my opinion, someone that owns a property that doesn't live there.
Okay, yeah. But if break that down, like a short-term rental versus a long-term rental, right? A long-term rental that's a Burbro, you know, but, and, you know, young and just trying to build their thing versus elderly landlord that's about to retire. Are those the same people? Should you be sending the same marketing and the same message to those folks?
That's a really good point. Yeah, because if you're marketing to landlords, the new, like if you market to me, I'm not selling my property.
Right.
But in 20 years, you hit me up, might be a different story.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, this is the kind of thing, like people think about absentee owners as a good list. Absentee owners is a terrible list, right? You need to be adding other criteria and bringing that down. And so I've gotten a little carried away. We have over 250 criteria, more than anybody else in the industry. The most powerful property search now ever built, including the big guys, CoreLogic, First American. And really, it was around that premise that to do good marketing, you want to get narrow with your lists and very specific and break out that older landlord versus the younger landlord, the one with lots of equity versus no equity, or a million other things in some sort of distress versus not. Vacant, everybody does vacant lists, right? But they do vacant based on the site addressed. What about on the mailing address? So put vacant together with mailing, where the mailing address is vacant. Now you've got a landlord that's not getting their tax bill. We just take a very different look at all of this stuff, right? And take everything kind of the next level and add a handful more criteria than you'll find elsewhere. Everybody has, you know, foreclosure stages, bank owned, pre-foreclosure, and auction, right? We have like 15, you know, so it was bank owned and it's still bank owned, but they've held it for a long time. Or, you know, this third party kept it versus this party flipped it, right? And we break all those out. And so you can look at, and that's good for competitive research too. Like, okay, show me every property that's been flipped in my market in the last, you know, 6 months and add that with other things. So just a lot more detail.
You got my wheels spinning too, because I'm in the marketing business also. We're always looking at KPIs, things like that. And it's like, okay, talking about your landlord situation, like absentee owner, say you got $10,000 marketing budget and you're mailing to the whole list. Say it was 50-50, 50% young people, 50% old people. Well, you can now, if you determine like on your KPIs, you do better with old people, quit sending to the lower 50%, double your ad spend on the top, and you just doubled your revenue with the same marketing budget.
Oh, 100%, 100%, right? When just, it kills me when I hear people, oh yeah, we mail absentee owners. It's like, you know, like, come on, you can do better.
Now, let me ask you this. So if somebody's, because people are obviously going to stack the list, like do different criteria, and that's going to give you the different variables. How are people going to track them? For example, if I'm going to send the absentee owners that are over 40, that own a property, whatever, how can they track their KPI back and see, okay, this part of it is waste. Let's not do that anymore. But this part is where we need to double down.
One of the other things that we did that was a different, unique, right, is if you take a list, we give you a bunch of insights, we call them, on that list. So for example, you could have your original list and we'd tell you how many people by age, how many people by income, by size of home, by all these different metrics, right? Then as you're getting those responses, you can put those in a new list. And then you can look at those metrics on the ones that you got a response from, the ones you've done a deal on, and see what they have in common and how they compare to the list you originally mailed. And a little bit of manual work there. We don't do it all for you, but it's pretty easy. You can just compare those two things and go, oh, okay, this is the younger group. And here we're mailing all these ages. So I want to focus on this group.
So basically, people can just manually go back, send a mailer, just wait for the data to come in, and then go into your system, be like, okay, over the next 2 months, put all the responses in, and kind of it's going to kind of break it down. It's like, okay, here's the whole list. Here's your sweet spot. You're getting.
Yeah, these are the ones these are the deals I did, and here's what they look like versus what I'm mailing and what they look like. And then I can just compare.
That's interesting. You can go down a huge rabbit hole there, too. It's like every month. I mean, if you like, I love data. It's like, You just keep looking at it, keep doing things and iterating. And it's like you keep refining every month and your ROI goes up.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Yeah. You know, we had a collective genius. There was a conversation happening about somebody in your world, right, doing the paper lead business. And with their customer, they were basically saying, hey, we need you to tell us which ones result in deals, because that way we can refine this and make it better and get you better results and, you know, improve your ad spend and all the rest. And the guy says, yeah, we're not doing that. We're not going to tag them in Salesforce, right? Whatever. We're not going to do that. And I said, well, geez, you could use our API, right, to monitor all those properties, all those people you marketed to and got leads from, to see which closed and which ones were bought by that client. So now that, because the client was like, you do it, I'll write you whatever check you want. And like, there's ways to do these things, right? Using the data and setting up triggers and things like that. And that's what I've just tried to create as a platform for anybody to go get as creative as they want on.
And that's really, okay, so you have an API that you can pull the data from too, which is interesting. Explain to people that what an API is. Some might not know.
Yeah, application programmer's interface. So basically, most of the things you can do in our system yourself as a user, you can have software do on your behalf. So, and you may want to build your own interface because you don't like ours, then you can do that and do it on top of our API. And again, most of the things that are in our user interface, our user interface is calling our API. So you can call that API instead. And lots of things you can do there around automations and other things. You can go look up specific information. You can even tie it into like your website. So you have a website where you ask people to put in their address and they type in their address. You can go look that up in our system and find out, you know, the value of their home, their equity, how many loans they have outstanding, if they have a foreclosure, if they're tax delinquent, whatever, and do that in real time and now start to maybe handle that lead differently, even route it different ways. That's very advanced. Not very many folks have the, you know, software engineers and the folks on hand. But, you know, we got our business. We started our business with folks like Blackstone and really big folks using us to buy all the foreclosures out on the West Coast. And so we've worked with a lot of these really large companies that do have software engineers and that kind of thing. And so we've just taken a little different approach. You know, we're not a newbie tool.
And that's cool, too. Like API, like anytime I hear API is like, OK, I can do whatever I want with the data. Like, I don't have to stay within your framework if I want to figure something else out. Like, I know one, let me know if anyone does this. One investor here in Pittsburgh, he checks all properties that sell. He goes in and looks at all of his leads, and then he wants to see what his close rate is. So then he'll run a report in like a month or two, see all the properties that sold off market. So he can see, okay, you know what? We're doing really well in our marketing, or our close rate's good, or we got 100 leads here that we met with and they sold to somebody else.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, we'll show the buyer and the seller. And so, you know, was the buyer me? No. You know. And then you can also watch your competitors. You know, you can do this through the user interface or through the API. You can watch your competitors and see what they're selling. You know, what they buy for, what they sell for, what's that spread? You know, we don't know how much they spend on repairs and commissions and that kind of stuff, but you can probably make some pretty fair guesses. How long is their hold period, and measure your performance against other people.
So what I'm hearing is, because I know a lot of people that listen are like nerdy in the data. It's like, okay, if you actually jump into the KPIs, your software and your business can help people make more money and optimize and just do better.
That's what I've been working at. And I built it for myself originally, you know. And I've just continued to improve it and try to make it better and better for, you know, again, largely for my own needs and my own, you know, my own investing and my own desires. And being a tech guy, plus having done quite a few deals, right? Like it's a fun intersection. And, you know, I consider myself, you know, definitely a data geek, not formally trained, as you know, as I mentioned already, I'm a dropout, but I'm definitely a amateur data scientist and, you know, spent a lot of time in AI, machine learning, all of it. So, you know, yeah, but lots of good stuff under the hood too. And, you know, that comes back to, you know, a lot of folks in this business are just, you know, reselling First American data feed. You know, you can buy that data pretty cheap and it's good. You know, it's not bad at all. But we multi-source and we have algorithms to say, should we use this data or this data? And, you know, it's just, it's a different level.
And I don't know, how much do you guys charge? When I was looking, I was kind of shocked. It wasn't that expensive.
No, I would say we've always been on the too inexpensive. It's actually a problem because with like some of our big customers, like the enterprise, true enterprise folks, like names you've heard of, you know, some of the guys buying, you know, the rent, buy to rent kind of models and stuff, buying 1,000 plus homes a year. It's a problem because they go, you're too cheap. Your data can't be good. We need to go work with a First American, a CoreLogic, a Black Knight. And I'm just, you know, hey, give us a try. I think you'll find our data is better than even the big guys, not to mention these little guys. We have a lot. We do a lot of modeling. Now, let me say, I think it's better. And I think overall it's better. It's certainly not perfect. Like public records data is awesome, amazing, gives you all kinds of stuff. And it is so imperfect and so problematic. And there are so many records with so many issues, right? So both things can be true, right? It can be both absolutely freaking amazing and absolutely frustrating because of, you know, and people will go, you know, I'll give an example. People go, well, I got zero results in my county. Well, that county doesn't have that piece of data that this county does have, right? And so we're constantly running into that. So, you know, you still have to use your brain, right? You have to figure out, okay, what's in your county? And, you know, hold us accountable. If you see the county has a piece of data that we don't have, you know, we want to know about that and we want to work on that. And to the degree we can, we want to fix it. There's 3,142 counties in the nation. So that's not easy.
That's got to be a nightmare too, because some of these county websites, like they're from 1980, you know?
It's really bad, you know, and like, you know, depending on the state, like it's really hard. Most counties don't offer document images in California, but like in Arizona, you can. So we have a thing to purchase document images, but we also give you the option to upload because in Arizona, why would you purchase an image when you just go get it for free? So, you know, it's just this, it's this kind of endless web of complexity.
So you guys have a ton of data. And you're in the foreclosure back, like that's where you started. What do you see coming up, like with foreclosures and things like that? Do you see any predictions?
You know, I think the world changed in September of 2008 and through 2009. Pre that time, right, the regulators required banks to get bad assets off their books as fast as possible. And, you know, that process of quickly foreclosing, putting those properties straight onto the market and then selling them at whatever price they'd sell at and dropping the price until they sold. At the same time, the banks removed liquidity from the market and stopped making loans to the very people who would be best suited to buy those properties was a major disaster. And I think everybody knows that now. And we won't see a repeat of that again, I don't expect, in our lifetime. We may see them make a different mistake, but it won't be that mistake. And not only did they learn that about residential, but in commercial, where we're seeing more distress right now, I think they also understand that lesson there. That if they start foreclosing on all these folks that are got themselves, you know, way over leveraged on the commercial side and start dumping those properties on the market, we're going to have a big problem. It's going to lower the value of all those assets and hurt the rest of their portfolio. So it's not going to happen, right, is kind of the bottom line there. At the same time, though, you have to have enough foreclosure activity to scare people into continuing to make their payment. Because if people think that, oh, they won't foreclose on me, then why would any of us make our payment, right? Except maybe good upbringing. You know? So, you know, we will see, I think, more commercial foreclosures. We're seeing that in some places already, Texas, et cetera. You know, we will see some continued increases of residential foreclosures. But on the residential side, you know, despite all the naysayers, the economy is really strong. And you look at just look at the dollars of savings that baby boomers have that as baby boomers pass away, they're going to leave to heirs who are probably more likely to spend it than just leave it in the bank. And, you know, oh, we want to upgrade. We want to whatever. Like, there's just so many tailwinds that on this economy that people aren't counting. All the naysayers aren't counting. Just look at the low interest rate period we hit. You know, something like 80% of folks, you know, now have a mortgage rate in the twos or threes. You know, that added $200 to $2,000 to almost every, you know, 65% of the country's pocketbook that they're now spending. And I think that's why we see airports still so busy and restaurants still so busy and the rest. So I don't, you know, a lot of people say we're due for some sort of economic problem. It's possible, but, you know, recessions do happen, but I don't think we'll see much big downside, certainly no 2008-like events.
Yeah. And you know what? That's an interesting perspective there too, especially with the commercial too, because no one talks really about the commercial, but all these guys got 5-year adjustable rates. No one's going to work. Their loans are going to reset.
No. It's a massive problem for the banks. There's no question about that, right? So, you know, and it's really not good. But at the end of the day, if you're a bank, are you better off continuing to take the payment that they could afford pre-reset, or resetting them and forcing them into foreclosure and having to sell an asset in a high interest rate environment? You're better off just continuing to take the payment, right? So if I own one of those assets, I don't, but if I did, you know, that would definitely be where I'd go with the bank, right? Like, hey, I can afford the payment I have today. Let me continue to make that. You know, we could talk about something maybe on the back end. Doesn't do you any good at all to foreclose. And because in this rate environment, you're just going to lose money. Versus if I continue to make the payment, you have a loan in good standing. So just reset it at the current rate.
Yeah, really good point. And the thing is with commercial too, you can actually talk to somebody. Like residential loans, it's like you're not really talking to someone. Commercial people usually have a relationship with the banks. It's like, hey, here's what we got.
A lot of states now, though, in the foreclosure stage require the bank to talk to the person before they can foreclose. So there's actually like a mediation step, and they have to like, the bank has to fill out a form saying they reached out to the homeowner X number of times and blah, blah, blah. So that's even changed.
It's just a different economy, you know, but I agree with you too, because houses are getting multiple offers still. Like eventually it can't keep going up and up, but it is for now and everyone's doing okay.
Oh, it's insane, especially here in California. The prices and like the income it takes just to afford a median priced home just doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, it's out of control.
Yeah, I was just talking about California too, because it's like half of those places you can't have rentals. Like the purchase prices don't allow for like if you get a $1 million property, it only rents for $5,000 a month. That doesn't make sense.
You know, it's an interesting thing, and I have a favorite little saying that, right, that California has the lowest rents in the nation as a function of price, right? And so you got a lot of folks in California, renters, that are being really honestly hurt by the increases in rents, but that doesn't change the fact that as a function of price, the rents here are still some of the lowest in the nation. So it's bad for landlords, it's bad for renters. And, you know, lower prices is the only thing that fixes that. But, you know, what's the path to that?
Right, exactly. So cool. Okay, so propertyradar.com. That's where people will go to find any information from you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm Sean at propertyradar.com. Happy to, very easily accessible, always happy to help. And yeah.
That's great. What about in the show notes? Who's your ideal customer? Like, because you have all these different types of investors. You have the brand new guys. Just took a course and they're looking to get into it. They may be, I don't know, like you tell me, is it the seasoned guy or the beginner or a lot of them? Like who's a good fit and who's not?
I will say, because we have so many criteria, right? You know, some of these other sites, you type in, you know, your city name and it comes back and goes, oh, there's this many absentee owners. There's this many foreclosures. There's this many like, and that's me wanting to blow my brains out because that's just a terrible list. That's the same list everybody is going to target. Do a little better job, do a little more targeting and send a better message. You're going to have much better results. So we don't do that. So it's not quite as easy to use as some of our competitors. So, you know, honestly, if a newbie goes and starts at a competitor and that's easy to use, only has a handful of criteria and stuff, that's fine with us. I'd rather have them after they found the limitations and they found the, geez, everybody is getting the same postcard I'm sending and they get 10 of them and I'm getting no results and I need to do better and I'm willing to work for it. Then they're ready for us.
Anything you wanted to make sure we talk about it?
No, this is awesome. Yeah. And I mean, there's so much we could talk about. And, you know, we're really also on a mission to try to get investors to rethink their advertising and be a lot more relevant and have more empathy for the folks, right? So instead of, hey, you're in foreclosure, I buy houses for cash, right? Just taking a little different approach, because somebody in foreclosure, you think their issue is that they need to sell their house and that they need to get out, right? That's what us most investors think their issue is. But if you stop and think about it a little bit more, what's their real issue, right? Their real issue is they're worried they won't be able to rent a house after they lose their house. Their real issue is the way their wife looks at them for getting themselves into this position. Their real issue is having to tell the kids they have to move. Those are their real issues. And I buy houses for cash doesn't address a single one of those issues. And it's kind of an asshole move, right? And so we're trying to really get investors to think about addressing those real issues. And I think we can bring things to the table, right? If you look at maybe helping that person find a rental, maybe their credit is trash now because of the foreclosure, but maybe there's enough money coming out of that foreclosure to prepay for a year. So a property manager will take a chance on them. Maybe you know those property managers that'll do that. Like, how do you really solve problems, bring value to the table, have empathy for their situation? Would love to see investor marketing move that direction. I think investors overall would be seen better in the world, could be a little prouder, walking around their own communities about the work they're doing. I know it's a lot more effective on the results because you're talking to the person's real issues, not your perceived issue, which is the foreclosure.
It's interesting you said it, because I was just talking with the team, and all investors think, hey, people want to sell their house, they have a problem, and they never look at the actual problem. It's like, the house isn't the problem.
Right.
The people have a problem, like someone died, they inherited a home, they lost their job, whatever the situation is, they have a problem that's triggering the house sale, but the house isn't the thing usually.
There's a lot of pride and a lot of angst tied up in that house. They're going to have to let go before they sell. And if you don't help them find that solution to let that go, they're not selling their house. You know, they'll stay in there right till the foreclosure, and then they'll hire some jackpot lawyer to try to keep them in the house and fight you on cash for keys after, you know, and eviction afterwards, and then declare bankruptcy while they're in eviction and stay in there another year at your expense, right? Like, because you're not solving their problem.
Are you seeing any changes, like, on how people are doing that to be empathetic and like their mailers, things like that? Or what are you seeing on that side?
It's something I've been playing with personally. It's something I've seen work with some of our larger customers. They're starting to move that direction. And I won't say you should move all that way immediately. Like there is a certain demographic that is all about, oh, you have cash today? Like I've got a different kind of need I need to fill this afternoon, right? Like junkies, there's a whole other world that stuff does appeal to. So I'm not saying
that's like 10%. I'd put them in a 10% bucket probably.
Yeah, you know, there is some demographic that, you know, that ugly yellow letter really appeals to. And, you know, the ugly yellow letters do work. So why do they work? And, you know, so there's a lot to unpack there. But even if you go ugly yellow letter with an empathetic message that focuses on their real problem, I still know you'll do better. But A-B test, right? If you're good at what you're doing a lot of marketing, you should be A-B testing these things all the time. I think it would be great for the industry if we moved more in the direction of solving real problems, having more empathy, holding ourselves out that way. And I think it would be good for the industry and good for all of us and good for our businesses.
I 100% agree. And the thing with like your business too, you help narrow down what the person's problem is, so you can actually send them something that's relevant to their situation versus just the pray and spray or spray and pray method.
Exactly. That's it.
What's your favorite book? What's your top book you'd recommend?
You know, I am a science fiction reader, and I like it because, you know, it makes me think about the future, right? Look, most science fiction is somebody's take on what our future is going to look like. And that could be near future or very far future, but it includes, you know, the Expanse series, which just had a TV show. You know, Mars has a basic income, like, which is an interesting, you know, I think topic as AI and stuff starts to take away jobs. It might be something we have to think about, right? So I always like that. I would say anything by William Gibson. You should read something by William Gibson.
Nice. Good stuff. All right, cool. Hey, well, thanks for coming on. Okay, we have propertyradar.com. Everyone listening, check it out or just check out the show notes. We'll link to it. Hey, Sean, thanks for coming on, man. We appreciate you.
Brian, thanks for having me. It was great.
It was a good time. Everyone, thanks for listening. Till next time, get out there, crush it, close some deals. We'll see you guys.